low moral fiber.
I don't think you should drink that.
Well, welcome to the room.
Hello.
Holding it like an inch or two in front of my mouth.
You need to get back to the
sessions.
All right.
It makes me feel great.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
Like I could.
Can I keep this head for a souvenir?
We found our first edit.
I like it.
All right.
Hello there, my fellow galactic fighters, and welcome to another Minock Exploding episode of Men of Low Moral Fiber, the show that always follows the commander to the right because we're hotshots, and because we're probably using a lot of cheat codes too. My name is Ben Helms, and with me as always is my phantom tie-destroying, empire-defeating brother and co-host, the hack to my rookie one, Jason Helms. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty well, and I'd like to set the bar for this episode. I'm okay with this being a terrible, terrible episode, as long as it gets lots of downloads. That's what matters, just the sheer number of downloads.
Today, if you haven't guessed it already by the title of the thing you clicked on, we're going to be delving into the Star Wars universe, one of our favorite places, for the first time on this podcast, and we're going to be talking all about Rebel Assault 1 and 2, so the original and the sequel.
Yeah, these were really cool games. I loved playing them when I was a kid. It was so, so much fun. And there was a lot of disappointment coming back to them because they didn't hold up quite to what I remembered them as.
True, yeah. They definitely look like games from the early 90s.
Oh, yeah. But we also felt it was important to do a non-scum game. We talked last episode about why that was important. But why two in a row? Well, because it's May the 4th. Happy nice. Star Wars Day, everyone.
So today we're going to do a quick highlight of the kind of the history, how these games got made, why they got made, kind of how they did critically and kind of all that kind of stuff. Then we're going to get into the actual gameplay with our good friend Nick Gates, who will be joining us to talk about what it was like playing through these games for the first time in 20 years. Then he'll join us for another rousing session of What's the Beer, What's the Song, the game where we tell you just exactly what these games would be if they were, in fact, a beer or a song. And after that, we'll end things talking about next month's game. So first, let's dig a little bit deeper into the history of the game. It's 1993. This is, 10 years after Return of the Jedi came out. Star Wars is still Star Wars, though, and it's still about as big as it's ever been. And it was a very formative and groundbreaking time in video games as a whole. I was 8 at the time. Jason, you're old. What was it like back then?
Well, we read a few articles to try and remember what it was like and see exactly what was going on at the time. And more than one of them mentioned that this was the first Star Wars video game, the first officially licensed Star Wars video game. And that's just factually incorrect. Just not true in any way whatsoever.
It was weird how often we saw that fact.
It was a lot, and it's wrong in so many ways that we're just not going to get into it. But what it was the first of was the first Star Wars CD-ROM game, and it was one of the earliest CD-ROM games. So we're using this term CD-ROM. I can't say it without feeling, I don't know, like I'm talking in the mid-90s. CD-ROM?
And this reminds me of Jurassic Park when they get inside the SUVs. And looks at the little TV in the front and goes, it's an interactive CD-ROM driver. Whatever she says.
Wow.
Which is just, hey, it's 1993, everyone. Forever. Yep. We'll always know that it's 1993 from this line of dialogue right here.
And Rebel Assault kicked Jurassic Park's interactive CD-ROM adventure its butt that it didn't hang on to. Hold on to. Oh, I missed. So CD-ROM was the new thing. This was the first time you could put a CD into a computer, or rather the first time that became widespread. CD-ROMs were something you could actually – or CD drives were something you could purchase, hook up to your computer and play a new CD-ROM game. And CD-ROMs had a lot of promise. There was so, so much more space on them than had been on floppy drives. So you could put really complex games on them. You could put an entire movie on one. And that's really what CD-ROM games initially tried to do, was be interactive movies. And that's what Rebel Assault in some ways tried to do, mixed with an arcade game. But the CD-ROM, for all its promise, had some serious limitations. Most of the limitations were not in the CD drives themselves, although those were some issues. The bigger issue was actually in the operating software, the operating systems, which wasn't ready for such high demand in terms of memory. And so we'll get a little bit into how that played out in the game and why that has an effect on whether these games are really all that playable now. So, Ben, why don't we get into the actual development of the game? Can you tell me a little bit about how it was developed?
Yeah, so it was kind of spearheaded. Both Rebel Assault 1 and 2 were developed, designed, and the lead programmer and all that was a guy named Vince Lee, who I knew the name going into it, or you see the name a lot, just because he was kind of the main guy on both these games. And when I say main guy, it's because he wore a lot of hats. Every interview about this game you find online, Vince Lee comes up. Every fact about Rebel Assault, and you know, when he goes into the how do they do it, it goes back to Vince Lee. I did a little research on him, and basically he was it seems like some sort of child prodigy. He loved computers, loved figuring out how they worked. But basically he sold his first computer game at 15 years old. He went on to get his bachelor's from Berkeley. He got his master's degree there as well, I believe. Mechanical engineering, computer engineering, just kind of a smart guy. Anything with numbers, calculations, seems like he was involved in. Then he got hired by LucasArts to be the lead designer on the first Rebel Assault game, where he actually invented and designed the Insane Game Engine, which is the interactive streaming animation engine that he developed and programmed for Rebel Assault.
And you say that he wore a lot of hats. He was given so much control, and it's amazing since he was so new to the company still at that point. And so young as a developer and a designer, but clearly so gifted. And they really gave him a pretty pretty long bit of rope. He was given two guidelines. First, it had to be a CD-ROM game. Second, it had to be a Star Wars game. And he took it from there. You said he's good with numbers. He absolutely is amazing. And it's cool to kind of see some interviews with him and see the way he works. I think if you play this game, you might say he's not necessarily great on the humanities side of campus. The storyline is not the best. The writing is fine. It's serviceable. It gets things done. And in the interview, he actually talked about how he wasn't really that into Star Wars. He was into kind of more hard science fiction. He wanted the math. He wanted the technology. And Star Wars is all touchy-feely. But he had an interesting quote that I was looking at in one of the interviews where they were talking about, you know, looking back at this and some of the limitations of the game and what could have been done, what could have been changed. And, you know, would he do anything differently if he had to do it over again? And he said, you know, certainly it had a lot of limitations, and there was stuff about it that was not great and really kind of makes it unplayable now. But they were under such a time crunch, and they had such limited resources based on their own resources, but also the resources of the computers that they were designing this for, the actual household computers, that there really wasn't much he could have changed. It's just the way events conspired. And he's pretty proud of what he made, and I think he should be.
Yeah, I mean, even looking at the boxes for the games, it literally just says by Vincent Lee on them, which is pretty rare for any video game, especially back then when it was just dozens, even hundreds of people working on this game. But he just wore so many hats, did so much work on it. Literally on the cover of the game just says by Vincent Lee, not programmed, not designed, not headed up by, just like he wrote the book. He did everything on it. I mean, so at least he led everything on it. That's for sure. So the setup for Rebel Assault 1, they're very different setups. So the Rebel Assault 1 basically takes place almost as if you are Luke Skywalker, except your name is Rookie 1. You're never really given a name. And you can choose between being a male character or a female character at the very beginning, and you go through being Rookie 1. And it's basically if Luke Skywalker at the beginning of Episode 4, A New Hope, had decided to join the Rebel Alliance and go through that flight academy, rather than just whine about joining Biggs in the Imperial Academy. Never forget, Luke wanted to be a part of the Empire. So
Luke was a proto-Nazi. We all need to
true.
Know that.
It's all true. So bringing it back, this is kind of what if, you know, Vince is rewriting George's horrible script for that terrible movie that came out that probably no one ever heard of. And turned it into this mega monster Rebel Assault. So yeah, you start out doing some training with the pilot, or with the Rebel Alliance Academy, and then pretty quickly you're taken into the field to do some like live missions and everything, and you go on to, just like in Star Wars, defeat the Empire and blow up the Death Star in the place of Luke Skywalker, even though you're Rookie One the whole time.
And this is really where I first learned that there's nothing more satisfying than blowing up a TIE fighter, and nothing less satisfying and more frustrating than trying to blow up an AT-AT walker.
Yep. Yeah, it's very true. And so the second one is a little more developed plot. It wasn't just – and actually, we looked into the kind of the canon behind this. I remember when I was playing it, I was a little frustrated. But one of the quotes we found from Vincent Lee, his quote is, "I decided that making a fun game was more important than staying true to the Star Wars canon," which I thought was interesting. I mean, especially because this was built in-house and everything. I mean, this was, you know, greenlit by George Lucas himself. So he was apparently okay with having a game that didn't necessarily line up with the original films. But Rebel Assault 2 kind of goes off the map a little more. It doesn't fit within the films at all, and kind of just takes place in that universe where basically you're still Rookie One. This time you get a few more cutscenes. It's a lot more green screen filming with actual actors, which the first Rebel Assault doesn't have at all. And basically you start the game. You're doing, I think you're following up on a distress call, and you get shot down by some Phantom Ties, which are some new technology that the Empire is developing. This is way too many details, but basically it's a similar kind of story where you're doing a third person overhead view, cockpit shooter, rail shooter, and then one or two levels with first person shooter. So they do a good job of kind of divvying up and diversifying the gameplay throughout the games.
Yeah, and one of the major differences between Rebel Assault 1 and Rebel Assault 2 is Rookie 1 and Rebel Assault 1 is really just animated. It's very easy for them to have a male version and a female version, and they record different voices. There's not a lot of audio for Rookie 1. It's almost everyone else around you talking. Right. Rebel Assault 2, it's a lot more involved. You see the actor who plays Rookie 1 throughout all the cutscenes. They try to develop the character. And I think it's for that reason that they decided to make it so you don't get to choose your gender. You are a male and you're Rookie 1. Now, what I don't understand is why they insisted on continuing to call him Rookie 1. I feel like it would have been a great chance to maybe give him a name. Rookie 1 makes sense when you get to choose the gender and they're just not filling out any details. Once there's some details, though, I feel like the person should get some names. So we're going to get into the gameplay in a second, but before we do, let's talk a little bit about the immediate reception of it, because this is something I kind of alluded to as we came in. That, you know, I don't care about the quality of this podcast, but I'm only interested in us having a lot of downloads. That's me kind of reflecting the way that Rebel Assault was put together. Now, it's not quite as crass as that, but every kind of in-house interview I see about Rebel Assault 1 talks about how happy they were with the amount of units sold and never talks about the quality of the game. The game wasn't great. It had a lot of drawbacks. Control was a big part of it. The controls are really, really tough. To the degree that now, if you don't have a joystick to plug into your computer, it's almost unplayable.
Yeah, we did kind of bury the lead a little bit. These games were exceedingly tough. And we talk about that a lot with Nick in the interview coming up next. But basically, it doesn't matter how good a product is. If it has the word Star Wars written on it, it will do well. It'll sell well. So the critiques might have not gone well, that it wasn't received very well, but it still sold, I think, 100,000 copies in the first 3 days.
Now,
which I don't know a lot about video game sales, but I know enough to know that that's a lot. That's a lot of units. That's a lot of boxes of video games.
And they had initially anticipated selling 25,000 total. Right. Then they upped it to 50 a few months before. And then I believe it was a few weeks before it came out, they upped it to 100,000. And then those sold out in 3 days.
Yeah. So the games weren't, you know, they weren't received very well, but they're still pretty fun. There's definitely fun to be had in them. And it's still a venture into the Star Wars universe, which if you're like Jason and I at all, you probably like the Star Wars universe a little bit. You like some science fiction. You like some adventure. So, next we're going to talk about what it's like to actually play these games.
This is an interview with our special guest. We're going to ask him about the gameplay and we'll handle the rest. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
My Zippo lighter didn't work, but I was waving it.
They never do.
You haven't been introduced really yet. You don't exist.
Yeah. Okay. So with us today, our special friend who's talking about the gameplay on Rebel Assault with us is Sir Nicholas J. Gates. How's it going, man?
Doing well. Cheers to you guys.
Cheers to you as well. I assume the J stands for Jefferson, as in state of Jefferson.
Yes. yes, it does.
Does it really?
It does now.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm glad. I'll fill out whatever paperwork I need to make that happen and get back to you. But yeah, so we all played Rebel Assault 1 and 2 the past couple weeks, on and off. Some used cheats, some didn't. Okay, we all used cheats.
Thank you.
We had a couple friends as well play the games. We're going to kind of chat about how amazing and fun and easy these games were. So first off, before we talk about the last couple weeks, what were some of your... specifically for Nick, and Jason and I can answer this too, but what were some of your impressions and memories of Rebel Assault when I first came to you and was like, hey, we're going to play this game. Have you played it before? Kind of what were you thinking about?
Oh, man. So when I started listening to the podcast, I think Rebel Assault was brought up in one of the first podcasts you guys did. And when I heard that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's right. That was like, I played that. I played that a lot. And I don't even know how old I was. I didn't even do the math, but, it must have been, I don't know. I was in fourth grade or something, but I remember that game so vividly, and, crashing my, which I called the Millennium Falcon,
right,
because
right.
To me it was, even
each
though,
of our Millennium Falcons are different. They don't have to be the Corellian cruiser.
Right. Exactly.
Greater. Yeah.
My young mind just put me right there and said, but I just straight shot back to, my elementary school days, and watching my ships, just replay after replay of them falling apart in my head
over and over.
But that just was so vivid for me. And I talked about this game with some other friends before, when we're talking about like, oh yeah, remember, did you have an old Mac when you were in elementary school? Oh yeah, I did. And did you ever play this game? They're like, no. I was like, so for a while, until you guys brought it up again, and pretending that I never looked on the internet before,
right.
I thought I was kind of going crazy. Like, was I the only person that knew about this game? And obviously now I know that I'm not the only one. But it was, yeah, I was like, oh yeah, I remember it was a Star Wars game. And specifically, I remember more about Rebel Assault 2. I was like, they had like actors in it, and they'd run around.
Really good
blah,
actors.
Blah, blah. Yeah, really, really good actors.
Really good.
like Oscar. Well, I mean, it's a video game, so there's no Oscar for it, but
Oscar the Grouch winning.
Right. I think that's a Tony.
And I was explaining it, and they're just my friends would just kind of be like, "Nope, sorry, dude, I don't know what you're talking about." And so, finally, on some random podcast that my friend put together, they brought it up, and I said, it exists.
I'm so glad to hear it had such an impact. I kind of forgotten about this game for a long time, and it sounds you were asking people if they remembered it. I mean, it really hit you. Did you beat Rebel Assault 2 when you were a kid? You have any idea?
No, I didn't, because I'm trying to remember back where, like, when I played through this time, I was trying to pick the moment that I couldn't get past.
Yeah.
And I remembered the speeder bikes from before. So I know I got to at least a speeder bike level.
That level is impossible.
But that level was impossible. Because you had to shoot
the exploding Minox level is what
the exploding Minox.
Why would they explode? Who knows?
Anybody else remember your percentage shots on that one?
Oh no.
Mine was 1%. Yeah. I think I have winged a Minox at one point.
I know I got one and saw the explosion, and then after that, it was over. But I don't think, when I was a kid, I don't think I got any further than that level.
Yeah, I think for me, I don't remember the second one at all. I don't remember Rookie One. I don't remember his face, like that blonde guy. I don't remember Rue Marine.
Or the sexual tension between them.
Or the strong, just the strong. Great... I mean, tale as old as time, romantic story between them.
Will they? Won't
they're,
they?
They're funny. Meet cute.
Will they?
It's
they?
Just a classic tale. They did.
They were so vivid. Like, those actors were so vivid in my head. Like, I totally remember.
Really?
Like, yeah. That's awesome. It's so weird. It's. I'm really glad you guys. I'm glad that I was able to go back and play all
I
this.
I made you do this.
That you may, that you came up with probably the only reason in the world to ever play this game again.
That might be true. Yeah, I think for me, I think the only actual real memory, just because there's so many Star Wars LucasArts games that I have mashed up in my brain, the only actual one that came from this game is Beggar's Canyon and the very first training level. And I, too, remember just crashing into the walls over. I think we talked about this on another pod, but I just remember the sand dunes and going through on that. What did we decide it was? We're never going to remember.
T-16. I'm here for you.
T-16. God, nice. I don't think that's what it's called still. That doesn't sound right, even though I'm pretty sure it's
just
right.
It's in my lap right now looking at me.
Yeah. All right. Well, nice.
Wait, that's you have weird. A model? did you take the time to make a model of the T-16?
It's on your phone.
Okay. Just my phone,
Oh, it's in your phone. Oh, okay.
Whew. Jay, what about you? What do you remember?
I'm with you. I vividly remember Beggar's Canyon. I remember the second half of Beggar's Canyon, the overhead view. I remember the A-Wing through the Crystal Beggar's Canyon. I don't remember what it was actually called. But it was that level again, but now with crystals. And I remember the asteroids and then fighting the Star Destroyer, which I thought was the coolest thing ever. But there's no way I ever got past that. Because I remember friends telling me how to beat it was you had to shoot those little shield things on the top, and I didn't know that. So I'm shooting everything else and then just wandering
for hours. So many
passes
on that level. So many, because it just goes on that track that goes around the top, around the side, through the... it took so many passes to get through that level. After playing the game, what were kind of some of your overall impressions of the game, I guess, before we get into specifics? Anything that kind of changed your image of the game once you started playing it?
So for me, this is all really good timing with The Force Awakens coming, like just that all happening again. Like this year has been a really fun year of like really diving back into, the Star Wars universe. And so going back and playing this game,
I'm just going to jump in real quick and totally interrupt you. Another great thing, about Star Wars and about growing up and being a Star Wars fan is having kids and then getting Star Wars toys. All of our kids are under 3 years old, so we can kind of pick the toys for them at this point, picking Star Wars toys for them and kind of reliving the joy of Star Wars all over again. And I want to take this time to say congratulations to Nick, who just had a daughter 2 months ago?
6 weeks ago.
Weeks ago. Congratulations, sir.
Yeah.
I thought you looked tired.
We named her, we named her Chewbacca.
Nice. Right.
No. Nice.
Keep going.
Sorry. We did not name her Chewbacca.
That's a man's name. Why would you name her Chewbacca? Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
No, her name's Liv. Just so we clear that out, so that if she's ever listening to this years from now, she's like, great, you named me. You wouldn't even say my real name. You just made a joke out of me.
My real name's Chewbacca?
No, she's going to be like, Dad, why did you have to say my real name on that stupid podcast?
Oh, geez. So train of thought is back now. Okay, yes. So I think these two games could have been kind of like one of the first to, actually Rebel Assault 2 being like the first departure from the main storyline. Cause I don't know the game history, but like super Star Wars that came out before this, didn't it?
Yeah,
it did. But that just followed the storyline like pretty closely. Stuff did. So that was what my adult brain went back to. It was like, oh, this is, what does this count as canon? This is extended. This is the first extended universe. Does any of this play into And then, just a few weeks ago, today is May the 4th. So
yes, it is.
May the 4th. About a month ago they released the Rogue, Rogue One? No.
Yeah.
Rogue One trailer. And so, that's a whole new departure from Star Wars. So I don't know. I just all these new parts to Star Wars, old and new, kind of got my mind like thinking a little like, oh, do I need to take this into account or do I need to be, you know, to the nose and like, oh, no, it's only this, and this. But all in all, it just makes it for a more enjoyable, immersive experience when you just take in all the stuff.
Okay, yeah, so about here is when we went on about a 15-minute little trialogue, about Star Wars and the canon and what is in the Star Wars universe and what's in now called Star Wars Legends and all that. So to save all of you from that who aren't super into the Star Wars nerdery of it all, we're going to write a post, an adventure, on our website, menoflowmoralfiber.com. So go check that out if you want to do a deep dive and find out kind of where this lies. Rebel Assault 1 and 2, where they lie kind of within the Star Wars universe. And now back to our conversation.
All right, so Ben, I'm wondering, overall feeling on the two games, is it safe to say we liked one of them more than the other?
Yes. I don't know why I'm so nostalgic about the first one. I only remember the first level, which is the only reason I would ever say Rogue One. Or wow, dang, it's happening. It's happening. Seen the trailer and it's just overtaken my brain. Rebel Assault 1, but Rebel Assault 2 is just in every way, other than the acting, I guess. Every other way. It's just a better game. The controls are a little easier. The graphics are a little better. The story's a little better. It's just the acting, every single cutscene I see it, it's just literally it's laughable. Like there's no melodrama to it. There's no kind of subtext to what's going on. Apparently there's a sexual tension that I missed for the first 3 hours of playing.
Can't believe you didn't pick up on that.
But I think if I was going to play another one again, it would be Rebel Assault 2. There might be one or two levels from Rebel Assault 1 I would play. But there's that one level at the very end of Rebel Assault 2 where the Star Destroyer is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger the whole level, which I thought was just as soon as I saw it happening, I thought it was just a optical illusion. And then, you know, 3 or 4 minutes later, you're like on top of it, flying around it. And for me, that blew my mind even now, 20 cool years effect. After it came out. I thought that was a really cool effect.
Yeah, I found the controls with one so difficult that I had trouble playing it at all. Mm-hmm. But it had really, they'd improved that so much with two that I found two to be really enjoyable.
Yeah. So for me, like speaking of controls, like, one totally unportable, like, it's just so, so tough. I had a PS3 controller that I was using, but it was always really finicky. So that when it came to Rebel Assault 2, I was like, I'm going back to what I'm used to. Because the last time I played this game, I played it with just a mouse. And so I did that. And so Rebel Assault 2, I played with a mouse. And it actually worked okay. Like, it worked fine for me. No joystick. Cool. So that was good. And then what it also did was when I got to the first third-person shooting level, when you're on when you crash land and you're going through the Imperial base,
right?
I remembered from when I played, I got stuck on that level for so long because I didn't realize that if you right clicked, you can duck behind cover.
Oh, nice! Yeah, yeah.
I did not get that as a 8-year old for some reason, and I took a screenshot of it because it was. A memory that was really stuck in my head was that first cutscene where death scene where you get blasted to death and you're laying there on the ground. And then you can see the stormtroopers walk up and the reflection of them in your visor.
That's pretty awesome.
Nice.
Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So that I saw probably 150 times when I was like, like 20 minutes into this game and I can't get past it. And then finally, because I was playing on Mac.
No right click.
There is no right click.
Nice. Yeah.
Now there is. Now there's a right click with my handy dandy magic mouse. But back then I was like, I have to hold down the control button. Or I think you could press tab or something like that and duck behind cover. But that was only after I read the manual. So, which, by the way, can we talk about the manual for a second?
I didn't read a manual.
I didn't.
Read the manual?
Tell us. I read it for Rebel Assault 1, but not 2.
Tell me about this manual, Nick.
I think both. Actually, I don't. It was Rebel Assault 1 manual. Rebel Assault 2 didn't come with a manual. But Rebel Assault 1 manual, I was reading through it and they're like, this is how you play the game or this is how you install the game on your computer. And it's like, first get a floppy disk. And then after that, you're going to need to bootstrap this disk for that one and then run this sequence and do this. And I was like, how did any kid play video games back in that day on a computer? And I don't remember any of that. So I don't know how.
That's a good transition into just jumping into Rebel Assault 1 and looking at it, because that's actually the aspect of the game that I remember the most is
loading
this
the game.
Was one of the first CD-ROM games, and there were a lot of additional requirements about creating a boot disk, setting up your system so that it could play, all kinds of stuff, and you had to get your hands dirty. And I was willing to do that. I was so excited about an actual Star Wars game that looked like a movie. I remember Rebel Assault being the coolest thing ever because of the graphics, because of the ability to actually pilot these crafts that I'd seen in the movies. And then those same things that made it the coolest thing back then are the things that aged the most poorly. So a lot of the cutscenes from the first one, now they look kind of goofy. They're not as impressive. And it's tough to remember that at the time I was just blown away with them. And we've had so many games since then where you've been able to pilot an X-Wing or pilot anything that have done such a better job with it that that part isn't as impressive anymore.
Yeah, it was just one of the first ones to do it. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the fact that it's a rail shooter. You know, they put you on a rail, you go where you have to go, where it forces you, and then you can kind of move a limited degree of movement within that.
Yeah.
What do you think about that kind of way to play?
Well, there is definitely differentiation for me between the first person piloting levels versus third person piloting levels.
Yeah.
The first person levels I liked a lot.
Yeah.
You're in the cockpit, you're shooting around, you're not, the movements you make with your mouse or joystick aren't like the end of the world.
Right.
Whereas like on a lot of the third person, piloting and shooting rail levels were just almost impossible. At least with the way my system was configured, it was just way too touchy. And I
remember it being that way as a kid, and I've seen reviews that talked about it being that way. The controls were really touchy.
To Nick's point, do you remember that level on Hoth with all the Imperial probe droids in the caves?
So many.
I remember pressing plus a lot because I cheated like crazy.
Do you remember how to get out of that stupid level?
You have to follow the arrows.
Right, left, right, left, I think.
I thought you had to kill all of them.
No.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? There's a way out?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so much more frustrating than
I was totally kidding about knowing what the way out was, though. I found it somehow.
I just kept shooting. I was there for half an hour just shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting.
Have you guys played what's the new Star Wars game where you play online?
Battlefront.
Battlefront. Awesome. Yes. Whatever it's called.
I haven't played it.
The
gorgeous
so
game.
Most of it's directed towards online play, and some of it you can play single player. But you actually don't get to play every like part of the game in single player. So, for example, you can do all the like running around shooting the traditional Battlefront stuff single player, but you have to go online if you want to play the pilot an X-Wing, pilot an A-Wing, and have these huge space battles. And to me, the space battles are the coolest part. I really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's cool.
To talk about like in Rebel Assault 1 and 2, I got the most enjoyment about just blasting TIE fighters out of the sky.
Oh, so much fun.
Like those in the first person, like going through the asteroid fields and stuff, that got a little hairy. But just the pure, just like wave and wave of TIE fighter coming after you and just blasting them out. I mean, that was a lot of fun.
So fulfilling. And there's even a nice reference in Rebel Assault 2 when you get to pilot a TIE fighter inexplicably. because you're training for some kind of spy mission where you're not going to fly a TIE fighter. But you get to fly this and your commander says something about, now this is different, you know, it can't take too many hits because these things don't have any shields. That's the way the Empire builds them. And it's like, oh, that's why you get to shoot them down so easily.
Yeah. And that's canon. That is like,
yeah. Sure.
Everyone knows that TIE fighters have no shields.
No shields.
They're a lot more agile though than a X-Wing or an Imperial or a Rebel fighter, but
it makes them more aerodynamic in space where there's a lot of air, a lot of air for resistance. So,
in my little bit of research, which meant, just checking the Wikipedia page, they mentioned that in Rebel Assault 2, they actually used props and costumes from the movie.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's another layer of there's the thing that I keep coming back to is there's another layer of like authenticity to this game and like LucasArts really making a push. Like this needs Rebel Assault 2 is part of the storyline.
Yeah.
That's kind of it seems like they put a lot of heart and soul in it. I mean, back in what was it? What's the year we're playing with here when they
did 95 for Rebel Assault 2.
So they're presumably filming this and putting it all together in 94, possibly even 93. I don't know how long it took to do all that, but I mean, they're building sets or using original sets. I don't know. They're filming on green screen. They're getting actors, Oscar award winning actors.
No, right. Absolutely.
I mean, they're doing all this stuff and they're putting all this blood, sweat and tears into it. It makes me think that, if you were to find that deep throat source to LucasArts.
Yeah.
That they would say that they would be like, yeah, like this was going to be a big deal. Like this was part of George Lucas's like storyline, or he really was behind the project, or he thought it was really, really awesome that LucasArts wanted to take the reins and really try something new and not just follow the main storyline. So just all these little elements kind of are striking me as this game represents something in the string of all the extra story outside the main episodes as being, you know, kind of the start of that extended universe and really putting some oomph behind it. But then nothing came. I mean, there's no Rebel Assault 3.
True.
George Lucas finally broke his trilogy streak.
Oh man.
Ooh, true. True. Good call.
So it's kind of interesting. Like there's a lot pointing to this in just my amateur sleuthing that I just keep scratching my head and going like there was some magic behind Rebel Assault 2. Rebel Assault 1 was kind of just little bits and pieces and kind of a random storyline, but Rebel Assault 2, start to finish, there was something new there, and they really wanted to start playing with the franchise and really wanted to start playing with the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, I mean, this was on that same Wikipedia page. They say that this was the first time they'd used any of those props in a film setting, at least. They filmed any of those props since Return of the Jedi, 14, 15 years before. And this, you know, 2 years after Rebel Assault 2 came out, the special editions came out. 2 years after that, Episode 1 came out. So this is kind of the beginning, like you're saying. I mean, just chronologically, it was the beginning of this kind of new, this next level of Star Wars fandom coming out for the next generation that didn't get to see them in the films 20 years before this game came out. But it also, for me, is the beginning of them, maybe not the beginning, but continuation of them stamping Star Wars on something that had a really, really high production value, but for a myriad of reasons didn't execute nearly as well as obviously the original trilogy. So let's get back into the game. How long did you guys last before you started using cheat codes?
Rebel Assault 1, I got, I think, one or two levels in, and then I was like, this is crazy. I don't even know. So I think on level 3 on Rebel Assault 1, I just started cheating. And then let's see, I got through to, oh, it was when is the next level, level 3, when you're trying to escape in the freighter.
Yeah, in the Millennium Falcon. That's not the Millennium Falcon.
It's, yeah, exactly. I love how they put that in there. That's just awesome.
You have a lot more self-control than I did. I cheated right away on both of them. I tried Rebel Assault 1 for a little while, couldn't get past the first level, maybe did it 3 or 4 times and just went, bail, cheating, I don't want to do this. This does not seem like fun to me. Ben, how far did you get before cheating?
Yeah, it was about the same as you. I think I got, I did the training and it took me 45 minutes to get past those 3 levels and died instantly after that. I lost my last life right after that. So started doing the cheats, and I keep having to tell myself that it's okay. Yeah. Pat myself on the back. This isn't a strategy podcast. This isn't a podcast that's saying, hey, look at all these games we beat. This is a podcast focused on just kind of like revisiting these games that were a part of our past and a part of a lot of the listeners' past. So it's, I mean, the cheating to me doesn't really matter. We're not trying to prove what good gamers we are. We're just kind of trying to revisit these stories and the gameplay a little bit. So,
well, it was interesting that I played, like, coming back to play these games, you're playing a game that you have lives.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
That true. You don't have that anymore. And so, like, I was really, really surprised when I'm doing the training run on Rebel Assault 1 and, oh, crashed. Okay, I'll get it next time. No. Ah, crashed again. Bummer. And then, you know, 2 more times. And then they're like, oh, yeah, you got to start over now. And I was like, this is how it's going to be through the whole game? Like, I only get 3 lives to make it through the whole game? And then you start playing through and you somehow magically get through the training run. And then you're like, oh, here's your password. whatever it was, like Bantha or something like that. And you're like, oh, so I've got to put, I totally forgot that you had passwords and stuff.
I think it I think we've been pretty upfront about the fact that anything that requires a quick reaction for me is just not going to happen. That's why I love the adventure games, is I just sit and I think and I try and figure stuff out. But these arcade style games, I always struggled with, and Rebel Assault is pretty difficult in terms of that. You've got to be real quick.
What is something from these games that you learned that informed your image, your point of view about this world, your knowledge base? Mine is, and it was shocking at the time, is when they go in Rebel Assault 2, they dress up as stormtroopers and they get the phantom tie. But sometime in there, I don't remember the exact quote, but at one point they run into another stormtrooper or some Imperial guard or something. And what's her name? Rue Marine says something to them. She says a couple like, hey, how you doing? Whatever. I'll put it in later what she says. But so the new thing in my knowledge, the kind of epiphany I had, is that there's got to be female stormtroopers, because this guy didn't skip a beat when he heard Rue talking to him.
That's a totally normal male voice.
Right. They have height requirements, but not gender requirements.
So that was shocking to me. I thought that was kind of cool. You know, anything for you guys that you learned that informed your knowledge base on the Star Wars
before
universe?
Before we move on, I just got to point out that Phantom Tie is a restaurant I would absolutely order from. So go on.
Phantom Tie. So
anything's better than Phantom Menace. So,
Okay. Now I remember. Was the fact that the Rebellion was able to steal a couple of intact TIE fighters to do those training runs. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I don't know, just a little peek further into the Rebellion and all their goings on. And it's not just them running around in X-Wings shooting stuff. Like, they have clandestine operations in the mix to steal or get Imperial gear. And
maybe they'll make a movie about that someday this year.
Maybe they'll make a movie about that, huh?
In that one level, you've got a setup for Rogue One, and you've also got a setup for the scene from The Force Awakens where they steal the tie and get out of the ship. So, I mean, it was really, really forward-looking.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, and for a lot of people are like, you know, a lot of people see Star Wars as like, you know, it's a Western in space, right? And you get this very, the straight way of doing it is there's the cowboys and there's the Indians, and they are separate and they have their way of doing things, and it's just good against evil, fight against. But with stuff like this, you get spying and like, you know, double agents and all sorts of crazy stuff starts opening up now, that it's not just like good guys versus bad guys. And I'm sure, like with Rogue One coming out, it's just going to completely change the dynamics of, it's not just the light against the dark. It's, you know, maybe some of these guys in the rebellion get their hands a little dirty to get things figured out.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, one of the main characters in Force Awakens is a stormtrooper.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, they're already doing that. Yeah.
I think the thing it illuminated for me, and this wasn't necessarily on this playthrough, although I got a chance to reflect on it. The Beggar's Canyon levels really illuminated the way that I watch Star Wars. Anytime Beggar's Canyon is referenced at any point, I've got this really vivid memory of it. Yeah. And the fact that Luke just seems to fly through it, you know, with ease, just for fun, bullseye and womp rats, is terrifying. And so I get this idea of Luke as an amazing pilot right away.
Just like his dad.
Just like his dad. Just like his father before him.
That's true. All right, so I think that that about covers everything and more on the gameplay of these two games. Go ahead and you know, you can go to GOG.com and download these. I think it's $10, $15 for both of these, for a couple hours of fun and frustration, and then cheating and then fun again. So it's a good time. So check those out. Right about now, I think it's time for a little game of what's the beer, what's the song.
This game's pretty fun. With frustration, when I was all done, I just had two questions. What's the beer, what's the song? I can't always tell. I just wanna know. What game is West D12?
Someday we'll play it and we'll know exactly as soon as we play it. This game is West D12. Unfortunately, Rebel Assault 1 and 2, not quite West Veledrin 12. But we do have a couple beers picked out, a couple songs picked out. Jason, you want to go first and kind of show us how it's done?
My beer was Heineken. So let me offer you a little explanation.
Okay.
Heineken's a beer that when I first started drinking, I was like, yeah, I'm going to have a Heine. This is exciting. It comes in a green bottle. That's different. And I loved it. It was great. And then I tried other stuff and I kind of moved on with my life. And probably 5 to 10 years later, I had another one. I was like, oh, I'll have a Heineken. And I couldn't drink it. I didn't like it anymore. I didn't want to drink it again. I actually got a skunked bottle. And it was one of the worst things I've ever put in my mouth. It's, you know, not all Heineken taste that way. But it was this feeling of something that I remember fondly and really liking, kind of betraying that trust and saying, maybe it wasn't as good as you remember.
Nick, do you want to go?
Yes. Yes. The beer for this game, this set of games, is I got to keep it real with Deschutes Brewery.
Solid
right here. Solid. Let's see if you guys know where I'm going with this, but it's a beer that I feel that, you need a couple friends to take down.
Nick, much like, can I stop here for a second?
Yes.
Is this the kind of beer that if you look at it, it might start to look back at you?
It could, it could reach out and it, I mean, it's a dark beer. Mm-hmm. I felt mm-hmm. that an imperial beverage, imperial stout would be very much appropriate for these games. You could go to the dark side after drinking this beer, but you need a couple friends. You need to defeat the dark side. You need a couple friends to take this dark beer out.
Nice.
It's from Deschutes Brewery. It's called The Abyss. It's
one of my favorites, man.
It's a great one.
Very intense beer, but very smooth beer. Very very interesting flavors. But like I said, an imperial stout. I would like to meet the person to take out a whole bottle of this on their own. It would have to be the Luke Skywalkers of the world that could take down the abyss in one sitting.
Beer. It's either the Luke Skywalkers of the world or the drunk uncles of the world that show up 2 hours late to your wedding. It's one of those.
I'm sorry. Take down the abyss. I'm sorry, Ben. How many times do you want me to apologize?
So my beer, a reason I picked mine is because it's dark beer, dark side in space. Very vivid illustration there. Very complex, very sweet beer. Just like this game, you know, it's kind of really fun, sweet, but at the same time, really, really complex, kind of challenging. It's a, 14% ABV beer. So at the same time, it's better when you share it with your friends. Because it's a rare cellared beer. It's not one you'd want to enjoy every single day, but maybe visit every couple years. And that is,
or decade.
Sammy Klaus by Castle Brewery Eggenberg in Austria. It's brewed one day a year, and it is just – I've had a couple of these that were aged 7-8 years, and they just get better every year, exactly like this game. So – and I'm just going to move right into the song, if that's okay with everybody.
Absolutely.
Because it's something I hold in high regard, this game and Star Wars LucasArts games as a whole. But at the same time, I find it very difficult to sit down with this game and really just kind of jump in. It's very easy to get frustrated with it, just like the Beatles are for me. So it's a Beatles tune. I was looking through some Beatles tune, and it's really hard for me to listen to the Beatles for a long time. I respect them. I acknowledge their greatness and their impression on the world musically. But I liken this listening to the Beatles like I do using cheats with Rebel Assault, in the sense that when I want to listen to the Beatles, I'll go and I'll listen to like Blackbird or Penny Lane or Eleanor Rigby or whatever. And then after like two songs, I'll be like, okay, I got my fix and I'm done. Like, I want to be able to sit down and just like put a Beatles album on and like soak it up and be smarter at the end of it. But I can't, I just stop. Like it sounds like kids music to me. I just can't do it. And I apologize to everyone for that.
Somebody, taste is up to the person,
yeah.
But you're wrong. You're just wrong.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way.
change my mind and open up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do.
Yeah, anyone else have a song?
Yeah. So it was between a couple songs for me, but this one kind of rung out as my anthem while playing this song.
Nice.
On, like, I can't say speeding down Beggar's Canyon because that was definitely a lumber. but more so when I'm out in deep space fighting phantom TIE fighters. But it's a song, it's a song that really just kind of lifted my spirits and just told me that I could do it. And told me that no matter what the odds are, that there's a glimmer of hope, and I can, you know, if I'm true to myself, I can win. I can make it through to the other side. And it's a song by Joe Bean Esposito. Bean apparently is his nickname, and it's a song "You're the Best." You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. So good. Originally on the Karate Kid, actually originally and only on the Karate Kid soundtrack. So yes, that song.
That's sweep the leg, Johnny.
As I'm sweep blasting, like clicking furiously on my mouse, just taking out TIE fighter after TIE fighter. I just keep telling myself that I'm the best around.
Nice. So, motivational. Yes.
So that was my song.
All right, Jay, what you got?
All right, mine's a little bit on the nose, but I think you'll know it from the lyrics. She said, "Come on, baby, I got a license for love. And if it expires, pray help from above." So I also went with the help theme. It's Billy Idol's 1983 Rebel Yell. So there's, you know, the title has Rebel in it, so that was really why I chose it.
Solid.
But also, this game made me want to yell a couple times.
Yep.
And every once in a while, it made me want to yell more, more, more. I really did enjoy, you know, a couple of it.
Nick, thanks again for joining us for the gameplay, the beer, the song, all of it. Congrats on the baby girl.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully we'll have you back someday. And you can always, yell at Nick if you want to. You can troll him on Twitter. It's at Nick J. Gates. Is that right?
That's it.
Or you can ask him beautiful questions, compliment him on his dulcet tones, whatever you want to do.
It'll probably be more trolling than anything else, I have a feeling.
I hope so.
Knowing your audience, you know.
Right. Mostly Brent. Yeah.
Yeah, mostly Brent.
Right. Thank you, Nick, for helping us out with that, playing those games with us for a few weeks. Your Men of Lomo Fiber t-shirt, sticker, and CD are in the mail.
Oh, we need t-shirts, stickers, and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, if anyone wants to make those for us and then send us a bunch and Nick one, that would be great. But next, we need to talk about what game we are playing next, which actually, we've been playing for a week now, so we should probably talk about that.
Oh, man, I'm so excited about this one. And you know what? So are the listeners. This is certainly the most requested game we've gotten listeners, far and away. This is the game that everyone played if you only played one LucasArts video game. So take a moment. I've hyped it a little bit. And put your guess in your mind. Get it ready.
Input your guesses. A, B, or C, everyone.
Yep. Put it into your iPod.
We're calculating them now. Beep, bop, beep, bop, boop. See, it was the right answer. Everyone, most of the people, 33% got it right.
Well done,
everyone.
It's The Secret of Monkey Island.
That's right. Another game from, no, this is 1991, isn't it?
Yes.
1991's own The Secret of Monkey Island.
That's right. 1991. We're not going to get too much into it. This game really covers itself. I'll just tell you, it's pretty much the best video game ever, so go play it. You can get it on GOG.com. We will also highlight other ways that you can buy it. Or you can go get your floppy disks out. There's some great jokes in the game about the floppy disks. So it's a nice little meta game. Tons of humor. Some great puzzles. Really, really a lot of fun. I can't tell you how excited I am for it.
All right. Yeah, the game is super fun. Totally holds up. So hopefully you guys will be playing that the next couple weeks. All right, I think that is all we have for everyone today. Thanks again. If you want to find out what we're doing in between episodes, you can go to our website, menoflowmoralfiber.com, where you can find links for us on Twitter, Instagram, email, all that kind of stuff. And let us know if you have any questions, comments, concerns, maybe heartwarming gifts, maybe chocolate, maybe cookies. Who knows? Let us know. But thanks again for joining us. I have been Ben.
I will be Jason.
And as always, I am a mighty pirate.
And stay tight, follow our lead, and stay clear of the walls.
See you guys.